Welcome to the Chicago Endurance Sports Podcast. This episode features content from our recent information-rich webinar on nutrition for endurance sports athletes. Enjoy.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. You're here because you're an endurance athlete and you are looking for some help figuring out your nutrition plan. It's a crucial piece to our preparation. Whether it's running or a triathlon, nutrition gives us energy. Today, we'll be focusing on nutrition for the long distance running, but a lot of these ideas can certainly carry over to other endurance sports like triathlon, swim, and bike. Today, we do have an awesome group of panelists with us today. I have with us from Align Modern Health, our functional medicine doctors and endurance athletes, Dr. Lexi Mikret and Dr. Blake Butler. And I have here from Chicago Endurance Sports, from our Elmhurst location, Coach Amanda Raz. And I am Coach Ryan Katern. I am a CES coach up in Lincoln Square. I'm also the Director of Community Partnerships at Align Modern Health. So thank you for joining us. If you don't know who Align Modern Health is, we are an integrative healthcare company. We have 18 locations in the Chicagoland area where we offer chiropractic sports medicine, functional medicine and clinical nutrition, acupuncture and cupping, and massage therapy. We take a non-surgical, non-pharmaceutical approach to treating from the root cause of our health challenges so that you can live your best and live your life to the fullest. There's a lot to get through, so let's go ahead and get started. Coach Amanda, from your experience as a coach and participant, how crucial is the nutrition piece to endurance sports?
You know, I feel like nutrition is definitely a critical part of not only your training, but your plan to show up on the day of a race. Definitely individualized for each person. But if you can hone in on your nutrition, practice it along the way, you're going to have a successful race day.
Absolutely. How are you on your first marathon season?
You know, I'm not going to lie. My first marathon was not with CES. It was back in 2015, ran the Rockford Marathon, and I was very ill prepared for it. Didn't really know much about nutrition, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I was fueling that race on sports beans and salt tab pills, and that did not go over very well. Definitely bonked out after that first half marathon component of it. Not my best marathon. So after then, really worked on figuring out what would work. So for myself, I've seen success with it as well as not.
I'll tell you what, I've experienced both as well. My first marathon where I hit the panic button and didn't really know how I should be approaching this. And I was training with a different charity at that time, not with CS as well. And then I've had perfectly executed nutrition plans, which led to just a wonderful race and feeling better. So glad that you're all here and tuning in for this. Dr. Mikret, I want to ask you, what is the perfect nutrition for endurance athletes?
That's a great question, and I wish I had the answer to it, but there is not one perfect plan. I think that what works best for you is what can be perfect for each individual race, and that may change season to season based on your body's needs. But I do think finding your perfect plan is not only inclusive of what you're eating during a run, but also during training and leading up to runs and throughout the week is just as important. So when you're trying to figure out what your nutritional goals are, I think it's important to take into mind what your personal nutritional needs and objectives are. Is it important for you to eat plant-based? Is it important for you to eat minimal processed foods? I think you need to make those decisions before heading into a training cycle. And then take an individual look at what are your needs. Are you getting enough calories? Are you getting enough protein for recovery? Do you need to avoid certain trigger food? So that's kind of where the individualization comes into. Finding out how you work best is what the perfect plan will be for you.
Extremely well said. Wow. Dr. Butler, so what are some factors that go into a nutrition plan?
We're all different and we require personalized dietary strategies based on our individual makeup. Therefore, I think it's important to understand that our size, our pace, our age, our environment all influence how we respond to our fueling strategies. And to do that, we have to be intentional about what works for us. And we have to practice these strategies over time so that we can figure out the best approach moving forward. We know, for example, that runners often underconsume, especially during a training block. Clinically speaking, I see it so often. We tend to think that this is a time to lose weight, for example, and we want to underconsume fuel, when in fact, that actually slows the metabolism. That has a negative impact on our ability to recover and perform, and that can influence our ultimate ability to maintain this over the long term, secondary to consequences of underfueling in the endurance athlete population. So I think it's really important to know that we burn approximately 100 calories per hour while running. And if you're running, for example, let's say 50 miles in a given week, and your general dietary needs are at 2000 calories a day, you're going to need an additional 700 calories a day to support that additional training. That seems like a lot, but just to maintain the baseline support necessary for that amount of training, we have to really be thoughtful about how we navigate our food choices. And that's why we're here today to have this conversation, to at least bring this to people's attention so that they can start to be thoughtful and intentional about how they navigate their food choices.
Excellent. And I think you touched base on something really important there. So Coach Amanda, let me ask you that question. How often do you see people look at weight loss as a goal for marathon training?
You know, I do feel like you do see that at times. I'd say I see that more with like first-time marathoners or less experienced runners. They're using it as a tool for weight loss. I know myself, I did start my workout running journey as a weight loss tool, and that's what I was using. But over time, I've developed a different relationship with running and fuel. So it's more focusing on using food to fuel my body as opposed to using it as I just ate something and now I need to go run and run it off. It's no, all right, well, what am I going to need to eat to feel my best during this workout? So looking at it more as like, you know, a way to help us empower ourselves to feel better on our runs, as well as even like, I think, you know, that recovery, I think that's a big part of that as well too, to prevent injuries. So proper nutrition, proper fueling throughout the runs and workouts and after is key. You know, weight loss can happen. That's definitely not something that we're not going to say if you're losing weight, that's a terrible thing, but it's not the main goal of this training and training for a marathon.
Ooh, you know, I think you actually worded that so well. And Dr. Mike, I'm going to send it to you. As we were kind of going over, like, weight loss shouldn't be a goal as part of your marathon training plan. However, take it from the standpoint of how does doing something like an endurance event and training for your first, maybe it's your first marathon, maybe it's not your first marathon, but how does that change your relationship with food and with diet?
Absolutely. So as you start a training cycle, you may be more cognizant of what you are putting in your body and how your body is behaving. So say you eat a standard American diet currently, you're eating out, maybe you're drinking more alcohol than usual, eating sugar, things like that. As you start to train, you're going to want to feel as best as possible. So your diet may naturally shift to more healthy, like anti-inflammatory foods, like more whole unprocessed foods, things like fruits and vegetables, more better quality protein, maybe less alcohol because you're waking up early to run, so you don't want to be hungover the next morning. Like whatever that may look like, you may naturally lose weight because you're cutting out some of the junk. So if that happens, absolutely fine. As long as you're hitting your caloric need and again, your protein need for recovery, I don't think weight loss needs to be viewed as a negative thing as long as you are not under eating and it's happening in a safe, efficient manner.
Yeah, you're all hitting on such great points. You know, I'll share my own little journey. I use endurance sports in a lot of ways to like trick myself into living a healthier lifestyle, right? Like I eat much better and I exercise and I stretch and I do all the right things because I'm in these cycles of training and things like that. And I think there's a wonderful relationship that can be formed when you have kind of the two working together. So great answers. Dr. Butler, let's start talking about nutrition during the week. How should we approach our nutrition during the week?
I think it's really important to simplify nutrition because if you look at the media platforms available to us, nutrition can become very confusing. And the goal is to really figure out what works for each of us individuals. Generally speaking, I try to recommend that we have a healthy protein source, a healthy fat source, and a healthy carbohydrate source at each meal. We call this PCF eating strategies and it allows us to have a balanced plate. I like to make a half of my plate essentially plant-based with regards to vegetables. I like to have colorful vegetables and I don't want to rely on the same thing always because I want diversity from a phytonutrient standpoint. I then want to have about a quarter of my plate, a healthy fat, including nuts and seeds or avocado, for example. And I want to have a quarter of my plate, a healthy protein source. And this is going to differ for different individuals, but I think if we can start with that as a foundation, that keeps it relatively simple. And then you can play around with different ratios regarding the macronutrients. And when I say macronutrients, I'm talking about the carbohydrates, which are found in vegetables, fruits, and grains, for example, in addition to healthy fats and protein. Protein can come from plant-based sources or animal-based sources, and quality does matter, in my opinion. So I think it's good to be mindful and intentional about what you're choosing. But when it comes to this as well, I think it's important that we try to remove a few potentially inflammatory foods. So we have our plate foundation. We also want to then reduce potentially inflammatory foods. I think added sugar, artificial sweeteners, in addition to seed oils. Those are things that I try to avoid throughout the week, especially during a training block, because inflammation is going to be a result of running, and that's not inherently bad. But if we layer more inflammation on that fundamental inflammation as it relates to activity, that makes recovery more difficult. So we want to try to reduce inflammation externally and then improve the antioxidant uptake. And that's where that half plate of antioxidant-rich foods, including vegetables and fruit, comes into the equation.
That's great. So let me ask you this. When and what should we be considering for the weekend long runs?
So when eating for the weekend long run, I like to eat very similarly compared to a previous evening. I think that this idea that we should eat well on Friday to prepare for Saturday kind of misses the point. We should develop good practices throughout the entire week and then continue throughout the weekend with those good practices as best as possible to support the long run. One key detail, however, after the long run, it's very important to introduce more antioxidants to help the body recover. So if you can really work to increase your intake of berries or colorful plant-based foods after the long run, there's a lot of value there as it relates to antioxidant intake, which can help with recovery. One quick note, in the morning, or rather the morning leading up to a long run, for example, I don't recommend loading up on antioxidants at that point in time. I recommend a relatively simple meal, and that may be something we get into here shortly, but I would save the antioxidants for after the run because there's studies looking into antioxidant use pre or post activity. And we find that antioxidants after activity provide more benefit. Whereas if you were to take that prior to the activity, that may reduce your adaptation as it relates to that run. And when we run or we're active, we want to adapt to that in a positive way. And we don't want to mitigate that natural body response. So I think that's important. Generally, the night before a long run, make sure you're introducing carbohydrates that you know you tolerate well. I wouldn't try new things. I would try to introduce behaviors that are tried and true for you, just to ensure that you know you're not going to have digestive upset the next morning, secondary to trying some new unique combination of grains or other combinations of food, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me throw this other question out there. As I know, a lot of us are doing nutritional diaries, and as we're testing things out, like what works well, what upsets our stomach, what doesn't upset our stomach, how far back do we need to reach back? And like, do we look at like just what we ate the morning before or a morning of or the evening before, or how far back can food react and cause that upset stomach on those big long runs?
Great question. So if we exclude food allergies that typically promote an immediate response, we can look at food sensitivity, or often termed intolerances. And we know that food sensitivities can take upwards of 72 hours to demonstrate or create a symptom pattern. So we have to look back 2 or 3 days prior to the onset of new symptoms to really then consider which food may be contributing to that. We can start to break down what may be different within that timeline. We can start to experiment with that in the future to determine how we respond to that food again, to determine if it is an issue. And we can start to use tracking methodologies to understand which foods are trigger foods and which foods are well tolerated. So doing that early in the training block can be really helpful. Really listening to your body and engaging with your body from a health perspective allows us to learn a lot without the need for advanced testing. If there's a significant struggle and it's very difficult and ambiguous with regards to what's going on, that's where in some cases we can look at advanced diagnostic testing to determine how your immune system reacts to food or the environment. We can also look at the gut microbiome to see if a healthy gut or an unhealthy gut, more specifically, is influencing our tolerance as it relates to food. So that's where we have the opportunity to go a little bit deeper. But for most of us, it just takes some intentionality and tracking with regards to how we respond to what we're bringing into our body.
Okay, great. So we're kind of leaning more towards talking about the long runs and the idea of carbo loading, right? That's a big term that's used in endurance sports. So Dr. Mikrit, carb loading is typically looked at and done with pasta, but there are other ways to look at carb loading. Am I right?
Absolutely. Like, I know historically everyone thinks pasta when we think carb loading. I remember being in high school cross country and we would always go to someone's house before a 3-mile race and eat all the pasta. But when we're doing that, we're missing out on all the other food groups. So my viewpoint on carb loading is absolutely increasing carbs, but still having some fat and protein with it. So you're basically trying to add in extra carb calories, but not necessarily reducing your fat and your protein intake. Ideally, you're looking about 2 to 3 days before you start, doing this before a big race. I absolutely recommend playing with it during your long runs. Like Dr. Butler just mentioned, there may be certain foods that upset your stomach, so you do not want to introduce a new pasta dish the day before race day, especially if there's other ingredients, maybe dairy that's harsh on your stomach or whatever it may be. But we absolutely can look past pasta. There's carbs and lots of plant-based sources. So think starchy vegetables, things like squashes, zucchini, sweet potatoes, We could dive into some fruit to add some extra carbohydrates and not get like inflammatory sugars. You can play with whole grains, but again, sometimes it could cause digestive upset because of the higher fiber. And if you tolerate more simple to digest carbohydrates, things like rice, potatoes, cereals, pasta, maybe the time and place to lean into those foods so that you do not get GI upset. But again, it's all practice trying to figure out, do the higher fiber foods sit okay with you? Or do you need to lean into more simple carbs like the rice, the pasta, breads, things like that?
Nice. And Coach Amanda, what are some ways that you've approached prepping for a long run, and what has worked for you and has it worked for you?
Yes, that's an excellent question. I think this thing's coming up, common theme in all everything that we've discussed is that practice is key with all of this. So trying different things and what works best for you. I definitely start 2 to 3 days prior to a long run, really getting in that fuel that my body needs and not going crazy, not just having the pasta the night before, but really focusing on the night before, especially. So like so you have a Saturday long run, so focusing on what you're having that Thursday night. And typically for myself, things that have worked for me in the past, I might have like a stuffed pepper, you know, with some ground beef and some brown rice in there. It could be some bonza pasta with some chicken or veggies mixed in there. So again, it's just playing with a lot of different things, chicken and rice, things that I know do not upset my stomach. Usually I'll have like a pizza and a beer and I'm like, well, then I don't feel so good the next day. And I know exactly why. So really it's just trial and error with that. I know I'm not going crazy the night before a run because I know that can definitely impact the way I'm feeling. I might be a little more sluggish, might have a little bit more GI issues if the night before, let's say I'm going out and having something new, like that wouldn't be ideal in this situation. I know people in the past do really well with like burrito bowls, with the rice, the veggies, the meat, but really it is a lot of trying different things and what works best for you. I like the idea you brought up, the antioxidants after a run. I know that's what I need to work more on is like the post run, like refueling and recovery. So I'm getting a lot of ideas from this as well. Definitely practicing a routine and seeing what works best for you.
Absolutely. I love that idea too, that we're constantly learning. I know we've had our number of marathons and seasons doing this. Each year, there's always a new nugget that we can kind of pick up. Let's talk about hydrating before the run. So is hydrating just taking in water, or what are the different ways that we can approach our hydration strategies, Dr. Butler?
Yes, of course, you mentioned water, and that plays a major role in hydration. However, as endurance athletes, we really have to be thoughtful about our electrolyte intake. I think we often overlook sodium and potassium intake in more detail. I think we have to really try to understand how much we need based on the activity that we're completing. Ryan, I want to throw this back at you. I know you and I had the opportunity to do a hike through the Grand Canyon. We did some significant planning regarding sodium and potassium. And at least from my perspective, that made a significant impact on our ability to function throughout that difficult environment. And do you recall how much sodium we had to take in per hour? I'm putting you on the spot here.
Ooh, yeah, you are putting me on the spot. I don't know the exact amount without looking at our little, we had a nice little spreadsheet that we were prepping with when we did the Grand Canyon. And we did it in July, so it was pretty hot. But what we did was we started out, it was cooler in the morning. We had our base salt. We were taking one lick, I would say like every hour. And then once we hit a certain time in the day and the temperature hit a certain degree, we upped that to like every half hour. And then once we got down to the basin where it was at its hottest, then we had picked that up to another, like every 15 minutes, we were taking more salt. And I'll tell you what, at the end of the day, we were able to kind of get through that without us two and our significant others not cramping, no heat exhaustion, nothing, no one vomited. We actually got there pretty unscathed.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can really apply that to preparing for a marathon or a long run, for example. We went around 16 to 32 ounces of water per hour during the activity, and that's really heat dependent. Same goes for sodium throughout the Grand Canyon. We started at around 300 milligrams per hour and we increased up to 1200 milligrams per hour based on heat. Generally speaking, for a marathon, 300 to 600 milligrams is a good starting point. And you have to practice this when you're training, specifically during your long runs, because we can overdo it. Also, it's important to talk to your doctor if you have a history of high blood pressure or cardiovascular disease, because we don't want to overdo it with sodium intake. And with that, prehydration is essential. So I tend to be really thoughtful about prehydrating leading up to the long run or the race event, for example. I want to introduce about an hour and a half before the actual run or race, about a half liter of water, so think 16 ounces. And then about 15 to 30 minutes prior to the race, I tend to introduce around 8 ounces I don't want to do too much because I don't have to use the restroom right after the race starts. So I think giving us that window and introducing our first consumption about an hour and a half prior to the race, and then having some more prior to the race, allows us to really moderate our ability to use the restroom during the run. And then during the run, 16 to 32 ounces per hour. If it's relatively cool, lean towards 16. If it's relatively hot, lean towards that 32, and make sure that you are also bringing in appropriate electrolytes. And on race day, you'll have options. So I would look at those options based on the race that you're competing in to make sure that you're practicing with those electrolyte options that are going to be available at aid stations.
I think on a previous nutrition webinar that we did, Dr. Mikra, I believe you mentioned something, excuse me if I'm wrong here, about practicing our hydration strategy so that if we are scared about having to use the bathroom prior to the run because we're taking too much salt and water, that if we're actually practicing, we shouldn't necessarily have that abrupt need to go to the washroom before the race. Is that something we talked about before?
I don't remember talking about that, but I do agree with that, that if your bladder is used to it and able to like withstand that, absolutely. And if you can't, maybe you have to look more into like the physical structural issues. Like if you have any pelvic floor weakness or dysfunction, you should be able to hold in a bladder worth of urine, or is there a stress component like anxiety? But again, knowing your individual needs is the way to do that, and knowing what you can handle like leading up to a run.
Awesome. Thank you. And Dr. Beller, I know we touched a lot on salt, but talk about adding salt to our meals. Like how much salt should we be adding to our meals, and how do we approach that?
Yeah, I often think adding sea salt, for example, to meals is a great strategy to help regulate electrolytes, because often during the week, especially during our shorter runs, we're not as good about navigating our electrolyte intake throughout that activity, pre or post activity as well. So if we can add sea salt throughout the week, or pink Himalayan salt more specifically, to our meals, that's a great way to balance electrolytes and mineral uptake. Furthermore, we can also be really mindful of how that influences blood pressure. So if you do have a history of high blood pressure, potentially monitor your blood pressure at home. Make sure that you're not overdoing it with salt. And if there's a reason to avoid that, we can find other alternatives and really try to prioritize salt intake during the activity or the event. So I do think it's very important, but also to continue to beat the same drum, it's really important that we individualize these recommendations too. So know that blood pressure really stands out to me, or cardiovascular disease. If you have concerns there, talk to your doctor before increasing sodium intake. And if we're going to increase salt intake, I'm recommending pink Himalayan salt or sea salt over table salt, for example. We tend to see better support as it relates to electrolyte replenishment needs when introducing those forms.
Great. Awesome. Well, let's talk about the morning. So Dr. Margaret, how should we approach breakfast? There's a funny concept of maybe not having breakfast before a run. Should we always have breakfast before the run? Are there any cases that we can get maybe a shorter workout without breakfast? Well, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I think most people should be trying to consume breakfast before a run or a workout. Ideally, about 2 hours beforehand, you may be able to tolerate an hour closer to your run, depending on your own digestive tract and how much food you can stomach before running. Again, practicing that and playing with that to know your own GI needs. Intermittent fasting is pretty trendy right now. I would strongly not recommend starting the intermittent fasting protocol during a training season. When we run, it's a stressor on our system, even though it's great and it's fun and we love it. It definitely can be a stressor on our body. When you work out fasted, that impacts cortisol, our stress hormone, further. So that is two things we're working against. The other part of it too is blood sugar stability. If your last meal was dinner, say you had dinner at 7 p.m. and you're running at 8 a.m., that's a very long time to go without fuel. Your body is already going to be diving into your blood sugar storage in your liver and in your muscles, which then when you're already going to be depleted as soon as you start exercise. So in an ideal world, you're going to wake up and eat something, again, 2 to 3 hours before you start your exercise. That meal should have some type of simple carbohydrate and maybe some fat and protein in it. Some examples to try, oatmeal could be really great, some oatmeal with some nut butter and some berries. Oatmeal has a lower glycemic index, meaning it releases those carbohydrates slower. So actually, if you start running, you'll have more storage of glycogen to use up to fuel that run. You could also keep it simple and do like a rice cake with some peanut butter and bananas, maybe a protein bar, depending on how you feel. So I definitely think you should try. If you're one of those people who says, hey, I can't run, my stomach hurts, maybe it's time to look deeper into your gut health and figure out, is there a reason? Are you eating something that's actually aggravating you and you may not be aware of that? So maybe your hydration's off. Maybe you have gut bacteria imbalances that are leading to sensitivity and poor digestion, causing issues. So if you feel like you really can't eat breakfast, it may be worth exploring the why behind that, because it can be a crucial part of running and really help you get the edge of your race.
I love that. That's a great way to approach getting to the root cause of why we can't take something. So that's great. Coach Amanda, what have you done in the morning before a workout? What are some tried and true ways that work for you and some things that haven't?
Yeah, I know for myself, again, it's been practice, but lately my go-to has been superhero muffins. Those are from the Shalene Flanagan and Elise Kopecky cookbooks. That tends to help me, as well as a banana. That's my typical go-to before a long run. I will have one cup of coffee. I used to not do that, but I decided over the winter season this year to start introducing that prior to the run. And so I've kept that consistent throughout the winter, spring, and into the summer. And I haven't had any issues with that. But again, that was trying it, seeing how it would do, trying with lower mileage first. So that's typically what I'll do. I know in the past I've done a bagel and peanut butter. I've run fasted in the past or just done a banana. I know for myself, definitely having some fuel in my body, and superhero muffins seem to be what's working right now. Cause I know if I, for example, Miami half marathon this year, completely different environment coming from, Chicago winter to, Miami winter is very different. So there are a lot of different factors going into not only fuel, but, sleep and, lack of, like electrolytes, things like that, just based on the humidity. But I know, like, I didn't plan my fueling strategy ahead of time. I didn't plan to bring something that I knew be tried and true for race morning. So I ate something new. It was not fun on that race. I was on the struggle bus. So I do know that, having a plan and having things that you know work ready for yourself prior to a run tend to help. And, you are going to have good and bad runs, but I know, like, if you practice and find something that works, it's going to help along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Great advice. I think I heard you talk about coffee. Dr. Butler, how should we approach caffeine? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Are some of us just overdoing it? How should we approach this?
Yeah, I think caffeine can be confusing. I'm not anti-caffeine. Some of us are more sensitive to caffeine. And specifically with training, we have to be mindful about how that influences our digestive function during a long run or a race. So if you're someone who thrives off of a cup of caffeine in preparation for a long run or a race, and you've practiced that many times, go to town. I think it's really potentially a beneficial part of supporting energy and getting you ready for that race day. If you're someone who doesn't tolerate that, be thoughtful about that, specifically as you practice your long runs. You could potentially try an alternative like an herbal tea or a green tea in place of coffee if you want to reduce your caffeine intake, for example. That may be something to work around with. I'm not necessarily a fan of the green tea prior to the run from my antioxidant standpoint, but we have to allow for some flexibility. So I'm open to having some flexibility with regards to coffee intake, but coffee can be rich in antioxidants. I do recommend organic coffee, though, whenever possible, if that is feasible, just because typically we have some concerns regarding mold and other factors related to coffee beans, and we want to be thoughtful about that, especially in sensitive individuals. But that's not always the case, and that really is more nuanced with regards to those who are very sensitive to this. So we won't go down that path. But I'm pro coffee, especially if it's tolerated. And I think with training, for example, or racing, caffeine can be a tool that assists the race. And I learned from you, Ryan, that it's actually very beneficial to take in caffeine towards the latter component of the race or towards the end of the race, because if you start with caffeine early, you may have to sustain intake throughout the race. And that holds true to that cup of coffee in the morning. So some people may find that they actually do better with caffeinated fuel throughout the rest of the race if they start every long run or race day with a cup of coffee. So do know that that's worth practicing, and it's worth trying it both ways with long runs if you're going to implement coffee. It just throws another layer of complexity into the equation with regards to preparation, but that's no big deal. You've got a lot of time to train for a marathon or an endurance event, so we have the ability to do that. With that being said, I'm interested in other thoughts on coffee. I know I'm relatively neutral, but does anyone on panel here have any different thoughts regarding that?
I agree with Dr. Butler that it's super personalized with it, and that knowing how you react, like say you're an anxious runner, you have anxious tendencies, maybe cut back on caffeine. That's something I see often in my practice, that patients might not realize that they are caffeine sensitive because you've been used to doing it. You're like maybe your whole adult life, and you may be on edge or anxious or have stomach issues. So definitely worth investigating cutting back if you have any of those issues. Or if you have sleep issues, some people are a lot more sensitive to caffeine than others. And even if you cut yourself off by noon, it may still be impacting quality of sleep. So if you're dealing with any type of hard to fall asleep, hard to stay asleep, play with that coffee intake and see if that can be a trigger there.
Yeah, Let's talk about coffee as it relates to hydrating, because I know it's made with water. Does it count as water, or how should we approach that, Dr. Margaret?
It does not count as water. I would not necessarily ding it for it if you're not having a lot. If you're having an excessive amount of coffee, upwards of a couple cups a day or a few cups a day, definitely make sure you're up in the water accordingly with it. But I would count it as neutral with hydration. You still need just as much water. It is not hydrating.
Just to build on that, actually, regarding sleep, we know the quarter life of caffeine is 8 hours. So 8 hours, or rather 12 hours for the quarter life after you consume that cup of coffee, you're going to have caffeine within the system. So say your bedtime is 10 p.m. and you have your last cup of coffee at noon, that caffeine is going to influence adenosine receptors upwards to midnight. So we know that caffeine can really influence sleep. And if you're struggling to fall asleep or stay asleep, or you're waking fatigued often, look at when you're having your last cup of coffee or caffeine, because clinically we see that all the time. And it's very hard to pick up on for many people because it doesn't make sense to many. If you have your last cup at 12, how is that influencing you into the middle of the night?
Great point. Great points by all. That's awesome. All right. So let's talk about race nutrition. And, you know, we're in the middle of training, right? We're like right in the middle of everything. So let's talk about how we kind of practice with it. So Coach Amanda, let's talk about practicing for race day. What's your general good idea to practice for race nutrition?
Yeah. Practicing is definitely key in this. And it's a lot of trial and error. And I'd say if you're going to try different new nutrition, I would try that on a shorter run, just in case you end up having any GI issues with it. But once you find some fuel that works for you, sits well with your GI, everything, I know on a typical long run or on race day, for myself, I find that taking less fuel more frequently is what works for me. I'm not a big fan of gels and goos. The texture and consistency of it just does not work for me. And I know that, but I know that works well for a lot of people. I'm a lot of fans of Huma, as well as other forms of those gels, goos. For myself, I found more of like the Cliff Blocks, or recently I've been really into the Goo Block Chews. They're a little bit smaller and they seem to have worked. I used them last year on my marathon, and that, you know, tried and true. So it worked for me, but it's typical serving size for those, like the Cliff Blocks or the Goo Blocks, is more than you think, you know? So 8 of these Goo Blocks is technically like the serving size to get you that, you know, the whole, you know, effects of, you know, that proper fueling. I'm trying to think of the right words for it, but, you know, so getting that amount of fuel that you need. But for myself, instead of taking it every 45 minutes to an hour, I just take it every 3 hours, and every 3 miles. And that seems to work for me. And I've practiced that, tried it throughout training runs. I definitely sip on water throughout the race. A good marker for me is at least every mile, I want to be sipping on water, if not throughout that mile. That's just a good reminder. So that way, if I am forgetting, sometimes it happens on a run, you're thinking about other things, you're distracted by everything going on. So just having those cues along the way helps as well. You could set alerts on your Garmin watches as well. If you have one of those, I'm sure with Apple watches as well, you can do that. So that's a good tool to help you with those reminders and prompts to keep properly fueling throughout. Don't ever take any type of fuel with any type of Gatorade or electrolyte. That tends to have a lot of those GI issues. I know I've done it in the past. It's not fun. Thank goodness for porta potties along the way. You know, it does happen, but try not to do that. But if I am going to take an electrolyte, I typically start between like mile 7 to 9 with marathon training. And I will do it within a mile before or a mile after I take in my fuel, just so that way I know that it's in my system. I don't have to worry about it mixing. So just really trying to take in that fuel and hydration consistently throughout it. But I think for myself, it's just having those prompts and cues. So I know every mile I'm taking some type of hydration, every 3 miles, I'm getting in some type of fuel. So for myself, those are my prompts and cues to keep reminding me. Because I know, like, if you say every 45 minutes, well, I'm not going to be watching to see 45 minutes on my watch, but I could set a prompt, a beep or reminder on my watch as well. So that's what works for me on race day and in training as well.
Yeah, I love that. And we were talking about this early on about being very intentional about the nutrition we take and not waiting until you bonk. So having that prompt reminder and knowing how often you take it to sustain that energy is really key. Mm-hmm. And I think you touched base on this a little bit, but Dr. Margaret, why do we want to follow most race nutrition with water versus an electrolyte drink?
Yeah, like so how Coach Amanda just mentioned, if you don't do that, it could lead to stomach upset. You could even get some like nausea or feel dizziness. We need water to absorb the electrolytes and the carbohydrates that are contained within those nutrition products. So chews, gels, goos, all of those contain electrolytes and sodium. And in order to drive it into our cells to utilize it, you need water. If you don't, you run the risk of bloating or poor retention. So really make sure that you consume them with water. And then if you like electrolytes throughout your run, that will be like on the off cycle. So if you're doing a gel every 45 minutes, do that with water. 15 minutes later, have a sip of water. 15 minutes later, maybe it's a big Gatorade or whatever that looks like for you.
Coach Amanda, so why would it be a good idea to know what's available on the course? What if I'm not even training with the stuff that's on the course? Why is it good to know?
It's good to know because that might not be something you've tried before. So you might want to try it ahead of time to see how your body reacts to it. You could also forget things on race day. You know, I know we do plan and prep ahead of time, but you could forget something along the way and need to grab a water or a chew or a gel along the way. I know for myself, I like to carry my fuel as well as my water on me, but some people don't like to do that for the runs because they know there's an aid station, a water station every so many miles. But definitely knowing what's along the course helps you prepare and helps you practice with those things. So that way your body knows how it reacts to those things. I know a big thing is like, don't take anything new on race day. So if you've never had, you know, a Gatorade, chew or gel, it might not be the best idea to grab one at mile 15 along the course because you're not sure how your body's going to react to that. So knowing what's available on the course gives you that time to try it, see how it works with your body, and kind of give you a little plan along the way. If, say, for example, maybe you can't stomach your gels or goos, because I mean, it does happen sometimes. And you're like, well, I have done Gatorade chews or gels before. Maybe try a little bit, see how that sits in my stomach this time around. Don't necessarily want to mix things, but you know, things do happen on race day. Much as you plan and practice, there are a lot of factors that come into race day, but knowing ahead of time what's available, doing your best to prepare, it's going to help you feel more prepared, just having a better idea of having a strategy and knowing what's available along the way.
Absolutely. You know, I can tell a funny story. One of my marathons I did in Las Vegas, and for some reason, the pockets that I had, as I was fumbling around how I was going to carry them in the pockets, which were Velcro sealed, they came undone. And within the first mile, all my nutrition somehow came out of my pockets. And I then had to take what was on the course. And thankfully, I had what was on the course in my pockets, but it was a different flavor. So I just had to deal with a different flavor. But at least it was dealing with exactly the nutrition that's on that course. And just know, like, you know, everyone, especially if you're a new marathoner, you're doing different races and things like that, every race is a little bit different. They're going to have, Gatorade is not a sponsor for every single race, and nor is Goo Gels going to be at every single race. So it's good to know to tune in and see exactly what is on the race course. And then maybe if you don't want to carry everything in your pocket, because they might fall out of your pocket in mile one, that you know that where all the different aid stations are that do have the gels, then you can pick up more gels along the way. Thank you so much for that, Coach Amanda. So let's talk about strategizing for our goal races. What are some ideas and how someone can strategize their long runs to adapt to what they're going to do on race day?
I'd say for myself, having a thought out plan ahead of time. It's important to have that because then it's holding you more accountable along the run. You know, you're excited, you're out there, there's so much going on. There's the crowd cheering, you got music, you got so much stuff going on that having a plan in place is going to help you stick to it. Whether that is just knowing every mile you're going to be doing something, setting alerts on your Garmin, just having that idea of when you want to take that nutrition, when you want to take that fuel is going to be helping you. And again, make you feel a bit more confident along the way. And you could do that while you're practicing as well along your training runs. When you find yourself in those tough situations along the way, planning the fuel, hydration, how you're going to even approach the race. Those are really important and are going to help have a more successful, more enjoyable race day as well.
We are so lucky that we have Fleet Feet Chicago with all these nutrition options. I want to see if we could kind of break these down and kind of talk a little bit more about them. So let's start here. Dr. Butler, what can you say about noon hydration?
Yeah, noon has a great sodium-potassium ratio. So if you look at noon, it's really going to cover your sodium-potassium needs, specifically every 30 to 60 minutes during activity. Also, noon's wonderful from a recovery standpoint. We can really replenish electrolytes after activity, or from a prehydration standpoint, I tend to use noon in that 16 ounces an hour and a half before my long run or training event. So noon is a wonderful formula. It has less than 1 gram of sugar, and we can rely on our other fuel sources to get our carbohydrates. So we're really relying on noon for our electrolytes more specifically.
That's good. So if that doesn't have carbohydrates, in contrast, let's talk about Morton. What does Morton have? What doesn't have, Dr. Butler?
Yeah, Morton's got a relatively simple ingredient profile. Morton also has the consistency of Jell-O and approximately 40 grams of carbohydrates. So I tend to actually run with Morton. You can choose caffeinated or uncaffeinated. I run uncaffeinated with Morton and I take in one every 45 minutes when my runs exceed 90 minutes. So anytime I know I'm going out for more than 90 minutes, I tend to fuel every 45 minutes with Morton. And if you choose to go caffeinated, make sure that you once again are mindful about how that influences you at different times during a run. Oftentimes, I would recommend introducing that later in the run to give you that additional boost.
Yeah, because it has a significant amount of caffeine in it, correct?
Yes. So you have to be very cautious with that one.
Yeah. And the other thing it doesn't have is electrolytes. Is that right?
Correct. It's a relatively simple formula. I find that it's well tolerated from the GI standpoint. So if you're not a fan of the typical consistency of the more common goos or gels, Morton is a nice alternative. I use it for the simplicity of the taste, but also the texture consistency. I find that it goes down much easier for me. And I think there's a lot of great options out there. So this is just my own bias based on my practice and experience. All of these products are really well designed. They're very well formulated and very intentional with regards to supporting endurance athletes. So know that you can find what works best for you and stick with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dr. Micro, what can you tell us about Huma?
I really like Huma. As far as like a preservative blend, it has more natural options to it. So the big concept of it is a parade chia seed, which is pretty cool because it has a higher fiber content, which is a more of a slower releasing carbohydrate. So if you feel like you're prone to blood sugar crashes, some of the more high sugar profile products may lead to like you feeling like jittery quickly, but the Humas may be a better option because of that fiber. They do contain electrolytes and their electrolytes are sea salt. So like we were chatting about earlier, how sea salt can be a great electrolyte profile. That's what Huma uses. It's also sweetened with real cane syrup as well as brown rice syrup. So if you're sensitive to some like those additives or artificial sweeteners, Huma may be a better option for you from a GI standpoint.
And then can you tell us like a little differences about gels versus chewables? Is it just a preference thing or what else is there to it?
Yeah, so like how Jananda touched on earlier that some of the chews, it is a lower nutrition complex per block. So you have to make sure you're reading the ingredients and seeing what the serving size is. That's something to be cognizant of. You may have to eat all six chews to equal one gel. So note that and what your stomach can tolerate. As far as taste preference goes, some people prefer the chews or like start with the chew if you're new to marathoning to like ease you into a gel. Just because the gels are a very weird consistency and it's not really like any food you've ever had. So you may prefer the chews. Also, the chews are less messy. The gels sometimes are hard to get open during a race. What I personally do, I'll cut them open like a tad bit so it's easy for me to tear. Because if I'm mid-race, I'm sweaty, I'm feeling weak, like I'm not going to get that goo open. So really play with it. See what you like. Preference is really key there, but also being cognizant of the nutritional label to knowing that you're getting the right amount of carbohydrates that you're expecting to get. Mm-hmm.
That's just a huge advice. I've definitely had to open someone else's nutrition during the course of a run because they said that like it was so humid out. Their fingers were like sausages. They couldn't grip the blocks, which was amazing. What if someone wants to create their own nutrition at home? Have you had any experience with that, Dr. Micro? What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I played with it a little bit. Now, I will say as much as I love to eat real whole food as much as possible, there's a time and place for processed products. And this is one of them. Because all of these products have been engineered to have the right amount of electrolyte ratios as well as carbohydrate ratios and to be easy on your digestive tract. If you want to play around with whole foods, sometimes it's hard to carry, but you could get some like squeezable applesauce packets, like those baby food packets can be a great whole food option during running. You could make your own electrolyte blend with sea salt, some fruit juice, and water. Coconut water could come into play here if you prefer whole foods. So really it's preference and like where your food philosophy sits. But I personally do think like this is the time and place for processed foods if you're okay with it.
That's amazing. That, you know, that's rare you ever hear that, right? There's a time and place for processed foods. And I think Coach Amanda, you shared a little bit what you take, but let's hear it again one more time. What is your go-to right now for marathon nutrition?
Yeah, my go-to right now is the goo blocks. But like we were talking about, you really have to pay attention to how much of that fuel you need to take to actually get the total amount that you want. So I do know in particular for that one, it's 8 chews to actually get the full amount of that serving. And a trick I use with the blocks, and I've done that with any of these blocks, is I'll open them ahead of time from the Ziploc baggie. And I know with the Clif blocks, when I was using those, I would actually cut those blocks in half. That would make it easier to chew along the way. Opening packages along the way is not very easy. If you're going to take a honey stinger, a Cliff Block, a Goo Block, any of those, opening those ahead of time from the Ziploc baggie, that's a lot easier to open.
And what I do love about the blocks and chews is that it's easy for you to modulate those. When I do use those, I don't have to take them all at once, like two at a time and kind of hang out with it, two at a time and hang out with it for a little bit. Yeah. So it's good to modulate those. So
Yeah.
Now we're going to talk about caffeine a little more specifically during the course of the run. So Dr. Mikrit, how should we approach caffeine during the race?
So we touched on this a little bit already, but once you start it, you really, really should try to continue it. Now, it really depends on tolerance, whether that's from an anxiety standpoint and or a GI standpoint. If you start caffeine at the start of your race, it may be too much every fueling to do caffeine, but maybe once an hour, do something with caffeine in it. But really play with this, use it to your advantage. Ryan, I know Dr. Butler already mentioned this earlier, but your story was really like thriving on caffeine to get through the end of that and push through and avoiding feeling like burnt out towards the end can be a really powerful tool for that second wind. So really playing with it, seeing what your stomach tolerates, seeing what your nervous system tolerates, and if you can handle it, waiting towards the end for a pick-me-up could be a great race strategy.
Absolutely. When I did my last Ironman in 2021, I had someone work with me very specifically on my caffeine. And they were saying, wait until the end. And I waited until the last half marathon of the Ironman to take the highest form of caffeine. And it was incredible. After a 12-hour race, I was feeling extremely strong and energetic at the end of the race. And that was because I waited until the second half of the bike where I started even taking a little bit of caffeine and just amped it up until the end. So I think that's a really good strategy to consider. All right, Dr. Butler, why do some people get stomach problems during the run or during events, and how can we avoid it?
During runs or activity, too much fat or protein intake, especially leading up to that activity, can make it very hard to support normal digestion. So be very mindful about the amount of healthy fat or unhealthy fat that you're bringing in prior to the event. We want to make sure that we're using meals, as outlined by Dr. Mikrit earlier, to support our pre-race fueling. Furthermore, a food trigger, a food sensitivity could also contribute to GI distress during the run. So if you are experiencing food sensitivity to something along the lines of wheat, gluten, or dairy, that could be an issue. Additionally, changes in the gut microbiome, which reflects the bacteria and yeast makeup of our gut health, can really influence our ability to tolerate many foods, even healthy and well-tolerated foods, and that could also influence our digestive function during activity. We know that other factors related to stress and underlying issues related to anxiousness leading up to a run can actually further worsen our digestive function, especially if you have what we would describe as a sensitive stomach. That's something that can be really important to address. And I think there's great mindfulness activities and things that you can do leading up to a run or a race to help support that, to make sure you're in the appropriate mindset. I also think if you're experiencing these things consistently and you've reduced the amount of fat intake, you've dialed in your appropriate hydration and electrolyte strategies and timing, and you've done all these things we talked about, you probably need to work with a physician to better understand what's going on. Because in those situations, there's potentially some underlying issue that would require further diagnostic testing to better understand.
Good point. So now let's talk about post-run, right? Nutrition is all about recovery as well. Dr. Mikrit, how does water support us after a run? Why is that important after?
Yeah, we are very, very dehydrated after running. To recover adequately, you should consume at least 24 ounces per pound of body weight lost. Now, I know you're not going to have a scale at the race day, but I would play with that at long runs. Weigh yourself before and after a long run and see how much weight you're losing. That's not fat, it's fluid retention that you're losing at that point. And of course, it will vary depending on temperature and climate changes during each long run, but if you tend to lose like a pound or two, it's really, really important to replenish that hydration that you have lost. Now, sit mindfully. You may be parched and ready to still like chug a bottle of water. Your stomach will not like that. So really be mindful and sip slowly, but it is extremely important to rehydrate, not only for how you're feeling and to avoid dehydration, which could be very dangerous, but it can also help with like muscle cramping and muscle recovery. So you can think about your next event that you want to do afterwards.
How does coconut water differ from that? Or how does that improve anything?
Yeah, coconut water is actually full of natural electrolytes. So if you're sick of your Gatorade or whatever you were consuming during the run, it's great to replenish. It also has some carbohydrates in it. Now, the one thing to be mindful with coconut water is it does not contain a high amount of sodium like made electrolyte drinks do. So in that case, I would add some extra salt to it or be mindful of consuming some salt with it so you're replacing that sodium as well.
Nice. Dr. Butler, I know that chocolate milk is a big go-to for a lot of endurance athletes. What are our thoughts about that?
Chocolate milk does, in fact, have a great ratio of carbs to protein from a recovery standpoint. However, I find that for many individuals, dairy protein can cause or drive inflammation. So it's really not my first line of defense. I'm biased because I have a cow's milk sensitivity. I just don't tolerate milk. So it's just not something that I play around with. However, if you know you tolerate that well and you have attempted that with success in the past, it does have a great ratio of carbohydrates to protein from a recovery standpoint. It can be a great tool to introduce from a recovery point of view. I like other strategies. I like to focus on introducing food specifically after a run. In fact, culturally speaking, I think there's a lot of value to then sharing a meal with others who have also engaged in that activity. That's one of the beauties of running. We have this awesome community of individuals who like to suffer together. So I'm a big proponent of actually introducing whole foods in combination with very specific hydration, like Dr. Mike recommended, with water intake based on the amount of potential fluid loss that occurs within the run, in addition to electrolyte replenishment. And then furthermore, beer. I can see that's messed on in the list. Beer gets a bad rap as it relates to recovery, and it should. Alcohol is not a health food by any means. However, thank goodness for science, we have some data that would indicate that one beer when consumed post-exercise is not deleterious to our overall recovery or our long-term training. More than one beer, that's a completely different story. And if you're consuming a beer, make sure that you tolerate wheat gluten, for example, because that can be a concern for some, and make sure that you're consuming it with food, specifically a food that would contain appropriate protein, healthy carbohydrates, and antioxidants. So a Mediterranean bowl, for example, is a great option with a nice craft beer after a long event, knowing that if you can keep yourself to one beer, you're probably not going to significantly diminish your recovery. If you exceed one beer, you're probably going to detrimentally influence your recovery and sleep that evening.
Thank goodness for science. We could have that one beer. I love that. That should be put on a shirt. What do you think about almond milk or almond chocolate milk? Does that have the same ratio? What are your general feelings about that?
Yeah, the ratios even look slightly different. Off the top of my head, I couldn't give you that. I don't drink almond milk personally. That's just in my taste profile. But overall, if you have a cow's milk sensitivity, it's a great alternative. Personally, I think you're better off really focusing on water intake, electrolyte intake, and then introducing whole foods. That's my bias. But almond milk's a great option to play around with if you do have a cow's milk sensitivity or if you are lactose intolerant, for example, because you may really enjoy that. And part of after run fueling is enjoyment because you just did something very hard and it's fun to indulge in something that maybe you do really like.
Nice. And Coach Amanda, what is your go-to hydration recovery after a run?
Typically, it's water. I do like to do some type of electrolyte drink. Sometimes it's a Gatorade. Or Noon or Liquid IV, that definitely helps. I'm a heavy sweater, so I do know pre-run and post-run replenishing those electrolytes is key for me. I do like a good cup of chocolate milk after a nice long workout as well as a post-run brew. But I know this is something I definitely need to work on, especially the food component of it, because not necessarily just replenishing the hydration, but also food-wise, I know that's something I need to continue to work on. But chocolate milk and beer are definitely my kind of go-to recoveries.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. So as we're talking about nutrition, and I know we've alluded to a lot of anti-inflammatory foods, Dr. Mikert, how should we approach nutrition for recovery?
Absolutely. So like Dr. Butler mentioned earlier on, that those antioxidants, this is their time to shine. So antioxidants are found in produce. So things brightly colored fruits and vegetables in different colors have different phytonutrients with different type of anti-inflammatory properties. So really at the point of recovery, eating the rainbow, eating a colorful salad, fruit salad really come into play here, maybe a recovery smoothie. Since when you run, you're going to naturally create inflammation, try to avoid other inflammatory foods. So things like certain type of grains like gluten, processed meat, those seed oils, fried food, certain types of meat do not have a place post-run, unless of course you enjoy it and you're going to have it in moderation, but maybe for one meal, not all of your meals at that afternoon. And then really ramping up healthy protein too. So finding the balance between tons of antioxidants, well-sourced protein, and some healthy fats to help your body recover and start to heal.
Dr. Butler, we can't always get our nutrition amounts from food and hydration. So what are some key supplements that can be suggested to add to someone's nutrition plan?
Agreed. We do try to take a food first approach. We want to be mindful about bringing everything we can from Whole Foods, not necessarily the restaurant, but general foods that you find at the perimeter of the grocery store. In many cases, we have the benefit of doing blood testing to take a look at trends related to nutrient imbalance. And I often find vitamin D deficiency, omega-3 essential fatty acid deficiency, magnesium deficiency, in addition to other antioxidant imbalances based on more advanced testing. So in those cases, especially when our demands are increased with regards to training, we can benefit from nutritional supplementation. I will note that not all supplements are created equal. Quality does matter and dose matters. So if you're introducing anything in particular, make sure that you're working with a provider, make sure that you understand contraindications or interactions with medications, and make sure that you have a good understanding as to whether or not this is actually beneficial, because there's some truth that multivitamins may not be helpful, especially if you're getting over-the-counter multivitamins with inexpensive raw materials and appropriate forms at a low dose. But when you do this well, when you have appropriate guidance, when you have the appropriate plan outlined based on data, these strategies can really influence our ability to regulate inflammation. We know, for example, turmeric from whole food stores can be very helpful to manage inflammation. If we can concentrate that and increase the dose significantly, we can really see more benefits from an anti-inflammatory standpoint. And we can do that through supplementation. We also know essential fatty acids, omega-3 or fish oil derived fats, are very beneficial from an inflammatory standpoint. They downregulate inflammation, and they can also help support cardiovascular function and brain function, in addition to hormone health and a variety of other things that are important in the overall healthy human beyond just the athlete. So we have a lot of options related to nutritional supplementation. I'm not recommending anyone go pick anything up over the counter, because I think it does require personalization and some knowledge and intuition regarding what that individual needs. And this is where data and testing really makes all the difference, in my opinion. Generally speaking, though, I would request testing related to vitamin D. I would request testing for magnesium and B vitamins, because we see so commonly these are abnormal. In my experience, not many people are having this testing done. And not many providers know how to work with the endurance athlete, because you need to look at iron, you need to look at B vitamins, you need to consider inflammation and nutrients that would influence that. So with that, just be really intentional, work with someone, and be cautious with regards to your medications and introducing something new without support.
Awesome. So I think the big key themes that we've been talking about throughout this whole webinar is practicing to figure out what your perfect nutrition game might be. So definitely take the next few weeks as we approach our bigger long run to have a successful race day. I do want to say thank you to our panelists for their time. That was a lot of information. I know it can be overwhelming. So if you can you give maybe one piece of overall advice to our audience to make this more digestible? Coach Amanda, let's start with you.
Oh, that's a tough one. One thing, man, you guys know I like to talk. I think a big thing is, I mean, you're just going to say it again, but it's that practice. I mean, this is a lot of information, but pick one thing. I guess that's what I'll say. Try one thing, you know, whether it's you want to focus on improving your fueling this time, improving your hydration, improving your recovery. Pick one thing this training cycle. Focus on that. See if that helps you and benefits you in the long run on race day. This is a lot to take in. And if you're trying to change, you know, your fueling, your hydration, your recovery, your weekly, like if you're trying to change all of everything too much at once, you're probably not going to have as much success. This is silly, but my second grade teacher said, inch by inch, it's a cinch. Yard by yard, it's too hard. That's really a philosophy I've taken on. And I think it's really pertinent in running. And I think that is true. Little by little, you know, we can do great things, make improvements, see growth. But if we try and do too much at once, it's going to be harder and we're not going to be able to see all that growth. And we might get overwhelmed and quit.
I love that. I love that term. I've never heard that actually. Inch by inch and yard's too hard. That's wonderful. Dr. Micro, any last minute advice you want to give everyone?
My biggest thing to focus on is eating enough. It's so easy to fall into that trap of under eating. And that's not only going to impact your day of run, your week of run, but it will impact your longevity with running. You're more likely to get burnt out or lead to other health issues, like especially with females, it can impact your hormones very significantly. So really, really try to make sure you're eating enough to fuel all the extra running you're going to continue to build up towards.
That's wonderful. That's beautiful. Dr. Butler, how about yourself?
I couldn't agree more with Coach Amanda and Dr. Mike. These are wonderful recommendations. I think one takeaway from my perspective would be to use this as an opportunity to build a food philosophy and to create sustainable, long-term healthy habits and a healthy relationship with food. It doesn't have to be perfect. We're learning along the way. We're making adjustments based on what works well for us, but try to establish an understanding of how food can fuel you and support your activity for the rest of your life. Because if you're like me, I want to be running and doing these things for a very long time, and food plays an important role, and I eat a certain way to allow me to do that. So establish that feed philosophy. Use this as a chance to learn and make mistakes early and often, knowing that you're going to get better with time and repetition.
So thank you everyone for tuning in. We hope you were able to take away at least one piece of knowledge to help you on your training journey. We hope that this serves as a good baseline and that you're able to make some tweaks here and there to fine tune it. Whatever your nutrition game is, just remember that everyone is made up a little bit different and that the best way to really truly find out what works for you is just to practice. Have a great training season. We look forward to seeing you all out there. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Chicago Endurance Sports Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss a single episode.